There we go. It is good to see you. I am really, really pumped about learning from Proverbs this morning on what, how we live and how we have skill for life when it comes to money. I will have to tell you that, and as a pastor, when you sit down and you open up the scriptures, there's times when you're studying and you're prepping and you're getting ready for to be able to teach and speak, where God just really kind of kicks you in the gut with what he's teaching you and what he's showing you and what he wants you to share. And there's times, this is one of those sermons for me. This is one of those sermons where you kind of sit down and you see what God has to say and you're like, oh man, I wish I'd known that. I wish I'd understood that. Especially in this context of the Proverbs where we're dealing with wisdom. How do we walk this life in wisdom? And we have defined the wisdom as the skill of living, right? That is the word that is used in the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, to describe wisdom is the same word they use for skill, right? How do we have skill for living? How do we have discernment? We started this series as kind of a kickoff of our study in the people of God on Solomon, where Solomon is offered from God anything he wants. God says, tell me what you want, tell me what you need, tell me, just I'll give it to you. Anything you ask of me, I'll grant to you. What does he ask for? He asks for discernment. He wants to lead his people well. He wants to know how to dwell with his people and lead his people in justice and righteousness and the way in which pleases and honors God. And so God grants him this. And he is the principal author of this book of Proverbs. And so as we have uncovered over the last few weeks what the Proverbs is about and what the Proverbs says about wisdom, and today what the Proverbs say about money, how we live with it, how we walk this life, it is something that is a part of our everyday. If you got up this morning and you ate breakfast and you got in your car and you drove here and you bought gas and everything that we do in life on a daily basis involves some kind of money that we have to use. How do we use it well? What is it for? How can we get messed up? What are the pitfalls in life when it comes to this topic that impacts every single one of us? We want to be a people who walk with wisdom. We want to be a people who walk with discernment. We want to be a people who walk circumspectly in the world, to be able to see through the falsehoods, see through the pitfalls and the traps of this life. And this is what this book is about. When I was 4 years old, I remember the day. It was August 15th, 1983. I remember the date because it's the day that I turned four. I was so excited because I turned four, and I remember this moment in my life. I thought I was like so old. I thought, now that I have arrived, I'm 4 years old, the world is mine, right? And I was going around to everyone I knew, I'm four today. I was just so proud of this fact that I was turning four. And we were traveling, I was traveling with my parents, and we were somewhere in New England at this Christian camp that my parents were doing a kind of a conference and concert where they were teaching and kind of leading in worship. And so we were there for a whole week, and I remember going around that one day just telling everybody that I saw that it was my birthday, and this one older woman came up to me, and she was so sweet, and she got down, and she said, I heard it was your birthday. So she's like, I got you a card. And she handed me this card, and I opened it up, and there were $4 in this card. I was the richest man on earth. I thought I was so excited about this. I'd never had money before. This is the first time I ever remember having money before, and I was just like, I could buy anything. I could buy. I mean, in my 4 year old brain was so excited. And of course, being four, I would go around to everyone I knew and say, guess what? It's my birthday. I've got $4. Like that was my deal. Everyone I met. So one day after dinner, we had all eaten, and I had my $4, I put it in my pocket, and I wanted to go fishing. I loved fishing, and there was this lake there, and it was this dock, and so I went out to go fishing. I was by myself. Now that I'm a parent, I think back on that and wonder, where were my parents at that moment? But I was fishing at the dock, and so these older boys came up. They were maybe 12, 10, 12. They came up and say to me, you know, how are you doing? Did you catch anything? No, but I've got $4. That was my response. And this older boy says, wow, that's interesting. He says, I just so happened to have caught a turtle yesterday, and it cost $4. And if you give me your $4, tomorrow at this time, I'll come back and bring you this turtle. And so I was thinking, turtle, that's the greatest thing I could buy with $4. So I gave him my $4, and I went home, and I told my dad. I was so excited. I was like, Dad, guess what? I just bought a turtle. He's like, where is it? He's like, it's coming tomorrow. And I told him the whole story, and I saw his face just fall, and he looks at me, and he says, Scott, that probably wasn't the wisest thing you could have done with your money. He says, I'm going to guess that you're not going to get your turtle tomorrow. I was crushed. The next day came, and at 2 o'clock, I was supposed to be out at the dock to get my turtle. I went out, and I sat at the dock for about 3 hours waiting for my turtle that never came, right? So my dad comes up, and he sits down with me, and I'm crying. I lost my $4. I don't have a turtle. And he sat down and talked to me about how the world works and how we need to be careful and wise and skillful in how we go about. This was my first financial failure as a human being. I wasn't wise or skillful with my money. I was naive in how I dealt with it. It came and it went. It went faster than it came for me. You know, what the book of Proverbs does for us here is it identifies money as an important and necessary part of life that is fraught with dangers and opportunities for great harm. Financial wisdom is not something we are born with. It is something we have to learn and understand. If we're going to have skill with how we handle and deal with money, we're going to have to understand how the world works. What Proverbs reveals to us is that our attitudes and actions when it comes to money speak volumes about our character. There is nothing that tests our character more than our approach and thinking towards finances. You've heard it said probably before, show me your checkbook and I'll show you what you love, right? Now, I haven't written a check in probably 10 years. So things, little paper things you used to write money on, like, all right, show me what you download or show me what you buy on, you know, show me your banking app, right? And I'll show you what you love. Show you the things that you care about, that you invest in. There's something that is revealed to us about ourselves when we look to how we approach money. It exposes and Proverbs exposes and provides character correction to the flaws and foolish attitudes and teaches us the skill for acquiring, spending, saving, and being generous and giving of our money. Proverbs, as we said over the past few weeks, are saying that describe the way the world generally works. They're not formulas of hard and fast rules that say, if you do this, you're guaranteed this outcome. Rather, it's maxims for life. In this case, if you act with financial skill, with wisdom for your life and earning money through hard work and avoiding debt and saving money and just and righteous gain, generally, you'll prosper. But those who are lazy, those who are overextended in credit, schemers who try to get rich quick, who get rich off the exploitation of others, those types of people generally will suffer poverty, but there's always exceptions. We all know the man who worked his whole life hard every day to meet his needs and supply for his family, and then calamity strikes. We all know the thief who gains through unjust gain, right? And his seems like everything is going well for him and rich. We have to look at this when the Proverbs talks about these things. We have to look at it in the long view. That what we see even in this small snapshot of time is not always the end result. You've heard it said this, that God doesn't close his books every 90 days, right? That we look at this in the long view. Proverbs are maxims for life. They're not formulas. So what are some things we need to keep in mind as we look at Proverbs and what it says about money? There's a few things I have here for you as we talk about it. The first thing is that it was written in an agrarian society. There was little or no currency in the times in which these people lived. So when you read things about your belly being full, or scarlet linens, or honest scales, it's talking about finances. Proverbs were written during the days of the Old Covenant. the old covenant with Israel, between God and Israel, that said if you obey and you honor and you live righteously, then God will bless you with prosperity, with material things. We don't live in those days anymore. These are blessings through covenantal faithfulness that were applicable to Israel, and so we need to keep that in mind. The other thing we need to keep in mind is there are two types of rich people and two types of poor people that we're going to read about today. There are the unrighteous rich who become so by dishonest gain, and there are the righteous rich who become so because of the benefits of wisdom, because they live with skill when it comes to their finances. In the same way, there are going to be these righteous poor, and there's going to be the righteous poor and the unrighteous poor. The righteous poor, it says, are better off than the rich. The unrighteous poor are those who reap the consequences of their own foolishness because they didn't live with skill for living in when it comes to money. The third thing I want us to see is that money is not evil. Money is not evil. It is amoral. It is a thing. It's how we use it and our attitudes and actions towards it that can be evil. It is not wrong for people to be wealthy and prosperous. In fact, if you're living in a way that is in wisdom, generally you're going to be. Even if you don't have a lot in the bank, you're going to be better off than most people because of how you live. The fourth thing I want us to see is that this is, I don't know how else to say this except this. You are rich. We are rich. Oftentimes we look and say, oh no, look around me. There's other people who have more than I have. We have to take a big view of this. We have to take a global view of this. There are 1 billion people in the world today who live under $2 a day. The global poverty line is $1.90 a day. Right? So globally, if you live under $1.90 a day, you're considered poor. In the U.S., poverty is about $12,000 a year, which works out to be about $32 a day. So if you are the poorest of the poor in this country right here, you are about 15 times more wealthy than the poorest of the poor globally. In 2016, there were 73% of the world that lived on less than $10,000 a year. And even in this country, there is a vast and growing inequality when it comes to wealth. But the fact of the matter is we today live in one of the richest nations of the planet, on the planet, and all the history of the world. We are wealthy. If you had breakfast today, and you got in your car and drove here today, and you're going home to eat lunch later, and you're going to have in your own home or your apartment, you will probably make more this month than some people will in their entire lifetime. We must read the Proverbs and understand and look at this and understand when it talks about the uber rich in the Proverbs, it's talking about us. We can't look at the rich of someone else. It's talking about us. The last thing I want us to see is the theology of money, and that's this. The theology of money is this. It is all God's. It is all God's. Psalms 50 verse 10 says, he owns a cattle on 1,000 hills. It says, it is he who gives wealth and withholds it. We have this tendency in our culture to look at ourselves with a little bit of pride, right? That we pulled ourselves up by our own bootstraps, that we have arrived at where we have through our own work. I've heard people say, well, I've worked for this, and so everything I have is mine. No, it's God's. Deuteronomy 8:18 said, it is he, that is God, who gives you power to get wealth. What we need to remember when we're looking at the scriptures, looking at the Proverbs specifically, is that we are our workmen in God's fields, drinking his water, gaining strength from his sustenance, breathing his air. Everything that we have is his. So wisdom with money and financial life skill begins with the knowledge of God because it is his. And he has the right to tell us what to do with it, how to spend it, how to treat it, how to look at it, how to live under it, how to use it, how to give it. He has the right over that in us. And sometimes we don't like that. I have a gentleman in my head, and I remember he's one of these people who just, he loved the Lord, and he had given everything to God. I mean, he was just one of those people who served the Lord with everything, except there was this one thing that he held back, and it was his wallet. And it became to him this source of contention. It came to him a source of worry and consternation his whole life, because he was worried about his finances, because he had never really grasped this idea that this is God's and it's not mine. He struggled with that. When we look at wisdom, we're going to see here today really the do's and don'ts of money. The do's and don'ts of money are this: we don't love it or trust it, but we love and trust wisdom. The do's and don'ts of money are we don't pursue it, but we pursue wisdom. We don't steal it, but we give generously, and we aren't enslaved by it, but we are its master. And this is what we're going to look at today over the next few minutes as we jump in. And if you don't have a copy of the scriptures, I'd like you to grab one of this. You could turn to page 339 in this copy of the scriptures, and you can kind of follow along. We're going to hit a lot of scriptures today. Do the best you can to follow along, or just write them down as we go. I think you'll benefit from this. The first thing we see here is that we don't love money or trust it. Rather, we love wisdom. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, "The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." It doesn't say money is the root of evil. It says it's the root of all kinds of evil, which means that there's this tendency when it comes to finances to lean towards evil. So we have to watch out for that. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 4 says this: "Riches do not profit in the day of wrath. Righteousness delivers from death." You see, we have this tendency to put our trust and faith in money. We have this tendency to put our trust and faith in our pocketbook or our bank statement, thinking that from it we can find our security. Thinking that from it, oh, I'm good. I've got a good portfolio. I'm all set, right? And what we learn from the Proverbs is we can't trust money. We can't put our confidence in it. That we can't lean hard on it, because the minute you do, it's going to fail you. This is the problem when we make money our God. And we put money as this idol in front of us as opposed to God. You can lean on God and he won't fail you. But you can't lean on money. You think that it's going to be there and it won't. It can go away just like that. Money cannot be our savior. We can't put our faith in money or material things to free us from whatever we need. We have this tendency, and we've talked about this before. I've told you that I talked to the story about my boys as we go into the store, right? And they see this toy that they want, and they really, really, really think that if they just get this thing, their life will be complete. If I just have this transformer, Dad, there will be nothing ever that I will ever want or need in my entire life. It will supply every need that I've ever had. And what happens? They get it. 3 days later, it's broken in the garbage. All right? Today's treasures are tomorrow's trash. And if we lean on it, if we put our faith in it, if we trust it to save us from whatever thingless hell that we find ourselves in, it will fail us. It's false. It's idolatry. We can't trust it. And we can't find our security in it. What Solomon shows us here is that money can't be trusted. When we lean on it or depend upon it or put our trust in it, we're simply fooling ourselves. We're setting ourselves up for failure. We're setting ourselves up for our own humbling. Proverbs 18, 11 through 12. "A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his imagination. Before destruction, a man's heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor." So the rich man takes and thinks that his money is his fortress, that it's his wall, but he's trusting in the wrong things. J.J. Heller has this song called "In the End." It talks about mankind's kind of gravitational pull towards trusting in materials or stuff or money to satisfy us. And I love this line in this song, "Oh, this silly heart of mine," she sings. "Looking for new things to buy, nothing really satisfies in the end, in the end. Greed is making fools of us, waging wars, betraying trust. Empires only fade to dust in the end, in the end. Safety is not for sale. You can't buy peace of mind. Earthly defenses fail. There's nothing new under the sky. Build your kingdom all your life and say goodbye in the end, in the end." When it comes to money, we cannot trust it. We cannot put our faith in it. We cannot look to it to satisfy us. It won't do any of those things. It will fail us, and we will be disillusioned and disappointed with it. We don't love it. We don't trust it. Rather, we love wisdom. Proverbs 3, verse 13 says this, "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding, for the gain from her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit is better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her." So what Solomon says, Solomon, the richest guy who probably ever walked the face of the earth, says, forget gold, forget silver, forget jewels, seek wisdom. That's better. That's better than what you can get. We are people with this insatiable thirst and desires and this never-ending quest for fulfillment that if we trust and hope and think that if we just get that next dollar, that next thing, the next material possession, it's going to satisfy us. In the end, it doesn't. As a culture, we are saturated and drunk for the next thing that will fulfill and complete us. And over again, we fall into this trap that this thing is what we need to save us. Proverbs 27:20 says, "Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, and never satisfied are the eyes of man." Right? This idea is this, is that we pursue what we think is going to give us what we think we're going to get. We get it and realize that's not what we wanted, and we want something more. If you place your trust in money, it won't satisfy you, rescue you. If you pursue it, you will neither have money nor satisfaction. But those who love and walk in wisdom have righteousness, inheritance, fulfillment, and ultimately no need of money. Proverbs 8, verse 18 through 21. Wisdom says, "Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness in the path of justice, granting an inheritance for those who love me and filling their treasuries." We don't love it, we don't trust it, but we love and trust wisdom. We don't pursue it, but we work hard for it. The next point in our series as we're going down, Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5 says, "Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it's gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle towards heaven." Solomon says, don't pursue money because you're never going to catch it, right? You're never going to get it. Here's what we learn from the uber-rich people. Enough is never enough. The pursuit of money is elusive and chasing after shadows. It's chasing after the wind. You're never going to catch it. It's never going to fulfill you. And before you know, your life is gone, and your time and your effort is pursuing this thing that you never could actually attain anyway. It's all for nothing. Don't pursue it, but work hard for it. It says, "The hasty and the thoughtless pursuit of quick money will bankrupt you in more ways than one." We read this in Proverbs 28:20. It says, "A faithful man will abound with blessing, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished." Proverbs 28:22. "A stingy man hastens after wealth and does not know that poverty will come upon him." Proverbs 13, verse 11. "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it." Pursuit of riches consumes people. How many have wasted their lives pursuing vast riches only to see them go as fast as they come? How many people have we seen sacrifice family and friends and church and relationships to get rich? This is not righteous gain. There's this great paradox that those who pursue wisdom, those who pursue skill for living, specifically when finances, who have skill with money, generally have prosperity. Yet because they're wise, they don't desire to pursue wealth. They realize what it is and what it isn't. And it's not their chief end. Wisdom is not a get-rich scheme. Wisdom is the end. Wisdom is the goal. Wisdom is the gold and the silver and the jewels. Though we're not to pursue wealth hastily, we're still supposed to work hard for it. And over again in the Proverbs, it calls us not to be lazy, but to toil and work for honest gain. Proverbs 14:23, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk only leads to poverty. Proverbs 10:4-5, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Over and over again, you see this kind of theme come up. Work hard. Do a good job. Don't be lazy. Some people need help from others to provide for their needs. Other people are just lazy. They don't want to take responsibility for themselves, but would rather let other people subsidize their lives. Proverbs says, don't be this guy. That's the path of foolishness. The path of wisdom is one who works hard and diligently to pursue wealth. The next thing we look at is that we're not to steal, but we're to give generously. Dishonest scales are what we read in Proverbs 11, verse 1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Dishonest scales are in reality stealing from people and God. It's unjust gain. And what would happen is you'd go into a square, you'd go into a place of market or business, and they would have scales that were weighted so that you would think that you're buying 5 pounds of something, but actually you're only buying 4 pounds. And so you're paying 5 pounds for whatever 4 pounds, but you're only getting 4 pounds of product. It was cheating people, right? It was skimming off the top. It was the business owner who was having unrighteous or unjust, unfair scales. It was dishonest gain. And this usually comes from the expense of others. Typically, it's the poor. Proverbs 20, verse 17 says this, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward, his mouth is full of gravel. Sounds appetizing, doesn't it? That's got this idea that as we're gaining the money, as we're seeking it, don't steal it, because it might taste sweet for a second, but in reality, it's bitter. It's like eating gravel. Proverbs 15:27, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. Spoke with a contractor one time. I had to actually do a kind of discussion with him and this other gentleman who hired him, because the contractor went out and he set a price and he agreed on the work that was going to be done for this individual, and the other guy was trying to behind the contractor's back get the subcontractors to do more work than was agreed upon for free, right? And so I had to kind of mediate this argument between the two of them, because the contractor was saying, I agreed to this price, and now you're trying to get my guys to work more, really, and it's stealing from me, because I have to pay my men no matter what they do, and I've got to pay the materials no matter what happens, and you're stealing from me. We have to kind of confront him. What we learn from the scripture is that we need to pay a workman his wage. We need to pay what we owe. If you're a worker, do the job you say you're going to do. Work hard for it. Don't justify robbery. Stay away from money that's gained by deceit. Proverbs 21:6, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. Proverbs 10:2, treasures gained by wickedness does not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. Proverbs 11:26, the people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. This seems like, okay, how do we interpret this? What is this saying? What does it mean to hold back grain? Why would someone hold back grain? It's supply and demand, right? The great supply lowers the price, so he can store it and sell it when the prices are higher. And so it's this guy who takes his grain that he has and he stores it up and he hurts people that are trying to get food, that can't buy food because he's just waiting so he can price gouge them, right? That's what it's talking about here. He's holding back the grain. But a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. The comparison here is that the person who is withholding is stealing. He's being slick and sly and making money at the expense and the suffering of others. It's argument here for just dealing in your business. Proverbs 6:18, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. When I was probably 12 or 13, I had advanced significantly in my skill with money, probably not in good ways. And we were at that age in our lives where my mom decided that she was no longer doing our laundry, that she was no longer making our lunches, that we were old enough to do all these things for ourselves. So she taught us how to do our own laundry. She taught us how to iron our own clothes. She taught us how to do all those things and basically said, you're on your own. Go for it. Now, my sister, who was 2 years older than me, did not like to do chores because she found that it really hampered her social life, right? So I seized upon an opportunity. And I said, Annie, I would be so happy to do laundry for you. I will make sure it gets washed and gets back on your bed, folded, everything the way it's supposed to be. I will charge you $1 a load, and I will do your laundry for you. She thought that was a great deal. So I was responsible for her laundry. Now, I had a younger brother who was less wise with money than I am. And so I said to him, Robbie, I have a great business opportunity for you. You can do Annie's laundry for 50 cents a load. He thought that was a great deal. And so I realized that I could make 50 cents per load and I didn't have to do anything. I thought, this is great. My parents were not so enthusiastic about my business plan. So a few weeks later, as they find out about this, I owe my brother like 30 bucks and I had to pay up because he had done all this work and I had just taken advantage of him. It wasn't fair. It wasn't justice. I was subcontracting him to do work that I promised to do. Are you a business owner? Do you sacrifice integrity to boost the bottom line? Do you cut corners and wheel and deal to make a buck? Do you pay a fair wage to those people who you are responsible for? Do you take advantage of people for your gain? Solomon says, you're a fool. Are you a salesman who holds back the truth about a product so you can make a sale and reach your quota at the expense of others? If we do, Proverbs says we are thieves, we are liars, we are robbers. We're pressing the unsuspecting to line our pockets. And the promise is, well, not the promise, but the general outcome typically is poverty. Proverbs 22:16. Whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth or gives to the rich will only come to poverty. This is one of those scriptures that hits you kind of like a brick. This is what this did for me. What this spoke to me, and as I see this and understand this, is that we need to be cognizant of justice and equity. Do you remember why Solomon wanted discernment? Why he asked God for discernment? It was so that he could deal with justice and lead his people in justice and righteousness. That was his goal. And the word for justice is kind of this idea of fairness, right? This is something personal to me that has been kind of like God has been working on me. And here's the thing. I love to bargain shop. I don't like to spend money. I like to save money. If I come home from a shopping trip and I can say, I saved 20 bucks, that's exciting to me. I don't know why. But like I will buy stuff sometimes I don't need just to save a buck on it. Like I feel like I'm getting something for nothing, right? I don't know what it is about me, but I love paying $2 for a shirt. And guess what I'll do? I'll walk around and be like, guess what? $2, right? And here's what I'm kind of coming to the awareness of as I look at this. What's the true cost of that? What's the true cost of my bargain? A few years ago, there was this Dateline special where they went undercover into some of the factories in Bangladesh, and they found this woman, 21 years old, working 70 hours a week, making 17 cents an hour, $12 a week is what she was making. And she was the person who would sew the stripes on these certain brand of pants that were sold in one of the box stores here. And they literally went and found the pants that she made here in the States, which were sold one pair for more than what she makes in a whole week. And they were just kind of exposing some of the inequality. They were exposing some of the conditions she worked under and how she was striving just to make ends meet, making $12 a day to for a pair of pants that we spend and we look at as disposable, like we could throw it away. Is this justice? Is this fairness? Is this equality? What's the true cost of that shirt that cost me $2? In human terms, there's an estimated 30 million slaves in the world, and some of them are making the clothes that we might be wearing right now. Some of them are mining the precious metals that are in our phones, that are in our tablets. Are we participating by supporting things and the abuse and the oppression of the poor? Typically, foreigners who live overseas, right? Working in sweatshops for 17 cents an hour so that we can save a couple bucks on clothing. Am I participating in the oppression, the exploitation of the vulnerable and abusing the poor because they're poor? I can for my financial gain. Is my gain on the back of someone else's sacrifice? This is not living life that leads to flourishing and equality for all. This will lead to our poverty. We don't oppress the poor for our own gain. We live in this consumer culture that tells us to get as much as we can, as fast as we can, at whatever the cost, even if it means we do it on the backs of others. And it wasn't even long ago that in this region right here, the robber barons of the Northeast polluted our waters and they abused and used people, and we're still facing the consequences of some of their actions that made them wealthy years and years, years later. Are we gaining off the backs of our future, the future populations? Am I doing that to others right now and the kind of companies and the materials and products I buy? This is something I'm wrestling with right now. And I don't know the answers to all of these issues, but I think it's worth the question that we ask ourselves, how is it that we're living in this way, in this world, in this consumer mentality that is saying more, cheaper, better at the cost of other people's sacrifice? It is one thing to be ignorant of these things and just not know. It's another to be willfully deaf and blind to the needs of the oppressed and to just swipe the credit card, being excited about the fact that I saved $2 and I don't really understand how that hurt and harmed and wounded someone half a world away. So these are things that I'm wrestling with. These are things that I see in this Proverbs that I have to stop and I have to question. I have to say, am I doing this? Am I oppressing others through my attempt to save a buck? We're not supposed to steal. We're not supposed to oppress. But rather, we are supposed to be generous in our dealings with people. Proverbs 22:16 says, "Whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth or gives to the rich will only come to poverty," we just read. Rather than steal and oppress and be unjust, we need to give generously. Proverbs 11:24 says, "One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, but one who waters will himself be watered." Proverbs 14, verse 31, "Whoever oppresses the poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him." If everything we have belongs to God and it's all his and he is honored by our generosity and he commands benevolence to the needy, then it's robbery for me to take God's resources and withhold them from those who are in need. because he commands that we do that. He commands our benevolence. He commands our generosity because it's all his. And he is about fairness and justice. We don't steal from the poor. We don't steal, we don't oppress the needy. We give generously. Proverbs 21:13, whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. What I'm reminded of this morning is that it was me and my own spiritual poverty that was caused by my own foolishness, my own sin, while I was despised and rejected. When I despised and rejected and ran from God, that Christ through his death on the cross showed me the greatest act of charity and generosity by giving me himself, and his love was lavished on me. It's supposed to control me, mark me as a follower of him, and we are known as his disciples. We are known as his followers by our love for people, which means meeting the needs of those who are needy. We're not to steal. We're to give generously. Finally, we're not supposed to be enslaved by money, but we're supposed to be its master. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is a slave to the lender. Have you felt the weight of this slavery? I remember I was 18, first year of college, walking through the library, and there was set up this table. And this guy is sitting behind the table, and he says, hey, would you like a free shirt? And I'm like, I'm in college. I'll take anything that's free, right? And he says, all you have to do is fill out this credit card application, and I'll give you this free shirt and a beer cozy. I was at a Christian school that you couldn't drink, so I was like, I'll use it for something else. But here he's giving me this free stuff, and I thought, this is great. I filled out the application, and before you know it, in the mail comes this little plastic piece of this plastic card, and it said that I had up to $400 to spend, and I thought, I'm rich, right? So I buy a pizza for my friends, right? And I didn't realize that that pizza that cost me $10 was going to cost me $2.40 every month for the next year, right? A borrower was slave to the lender. Have you ever gone to the mailbox and pulled out the envelope with a credit card bill and not wanted to open it because you didn't want to see what it said on the inside? What we learn from the Proverbs is money is a wonderful servant, but a tyrannical master. In the United States, the average household consumer debt is $15,325. The average mortgage debt is $147,000. Average student loan debt is $32,000. In America, in total, consumers own $11.6 trillion in debt, $856 billion in credit card debt, $7 trillion in mortgages, $999.3 billion in student loans. Proverbs 22:26-27 says, be not one of those who gives pledges, who puts up money for security for debts. If you have nothing which to pay, why should you your bed be taken from under you? Our society is a sucker for easy money, for the quick fix. You don't have the money to pay, no problem. Get your new thing now and pay no interest for 5 years, and then we got you. Proverbs says this is foolishness. And once again, we're mortgaging our lives to try to find fulfillment and happiness outside of Christ, and it leaves us being sobered and humbled. We're trapped and enslaved. Proverbs 17:18 says, one who lacks sense gives a pledge, one who puts up security in the presence of his neighbor. Proverbs 6:1 says, my son, if you put up security for your neighbor and you give him your pledge to a stranger, if you are snared by the words of your mouth and caught up in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself, for you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep or your eyes no slumber. Save yourself. Like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. The message here is get out of debt. Eradicate it from your life. We heap up more problems for ourselves when we try to fix our problems with plastic. And so many of our financial issues are really deep spiritual issues of trust or idolatry that manifest themselves in what we buy. we're distrusting and impatient and often arrogant. We feel like we deserve, so we go for it. Instead, we're being enslaved. A good manager has a plan to provide. We're not to be indebted. We're not to be enslaved by money. We're to be its master and manage it well. Proverbs 13:22 says, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Proverbs 27:23 says, know well the condition of your flocks, okay? This is talking about your material well-being, right? The things that you have. Give attention to your herds, for riches do not last forever. And does a crown endure to all generations? When the grass is gone and the new growth appears, the vegetation of the mountain is gathered. The lambs will provide your clothing, and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food and the food of your household and the maintenance of your girls. So here's the contrast with the one who's indebted and enslaved to the lender, with the one whose finances are a weight and a burden to him, and the one who masters and manages well. The one who masters it and manages well will have inheritance for his children. He'll have things to pass on. He will live in peace and prosperity. He sleeps well at night. For those of us who have struggled, those like me when I was 4 or me when I was 18 with a credit card who struggle with wisdom in this, don't beat your head against the rock for the next 15 years and be in the same boat you are in right now. But if you need wisdom and you need skill for living, find those people amongst you who do well and who have skill when it comes to finances. Get next to them, ask for help. Show me what you know, teach me what I need to do, help me. Find older people who can help you, find financial advisors, find those people who will kind of help you walk in wisdom so you don't have to be enslaved to money, but you can be a good manager of it, be its master. I want to close with this one scripture over time. It's ultimately the final word on balance, and it's Proverbs 30, verse 8. It says this, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. This is cry out to God that we not be people who look at our money and look at our finances as some into itself, as some savior that can save us, but it's something that can provide for us our daily needs. That is how we need to look at this. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. God, you know what I need. You know what I need for today, give me today. Because we can't trust in money for tomorrow. So God, give me that. Here's what I'd like to do in closing today. I would like each of us to spend some time in the next few minutes, maybe today, maybe sitting around the table with your family, and just pick one thing. One thing when it comes to money that we talked about today. Maybe you heard the scriptures and you said, you know what, I need to do a better job of being generous. Or maybe you say, you know what, I need to do a better job of getting out of debt and eradicating that from my life. What is one thing that you hear from the Proverbs? And maybe you have to go back through and read the Proverbs again and just highlight all the areas it talks about money. What is one thing in your life that you say, you know, as you look at and say, okay, I need to do better here. I need to walk with more wisdom and skill in this area. And it doesn't even have to, you don't even have to have a plan. But just identify that one thing that you want to walk through. And because we want movement towards wisdom. We want to be able to identify knowing where we need more skill. What is one thing that you need more skill in? God is ultimately the one who gives us power through the Spirit to live with skill and finances. And apart from Christ, we can do nothing. And despite what you hear from the greedy, self-indulgent, self-seeking, false-teaching TV preachers, he's not interested in making you rich. He's interested in conforming you to the image of his son. So let us be a people who do not seek our satisfaction in finances, or seek our satisfaction in our bank accounts, find our satisfaction in the tricks and trinkets of this five and dime world. Let us find our contentment, our satisfaction, our dreams and our joy And Christ, he's the answer to our thirst and the manifold wisdom of God. Jesus at the well, with the woman at the well, who comes to him, he identifies her issue. He identifies that she sought her satisfaction in this man, that man, this man. Now she's with another man. And he says, in me you will find the answer to your thirst, right? A well that won't run dry, because our money won't solve our thirst for more. Only Jesus will. Let's pray. God, we thank you for your word, and we thank you from it we can glean the truth about what money is and what it isn't, how we shouldn't trust it or depend upon it, but lean on you, trust you. That we shouldn't steal it, but be generous. That we shouldn't look to it to satisfy our needs, but look to you as our satisfaction, to our thirst and desire for more. God, I pray that we would be a people who are continually learning and learning how to better walk and skill for life when it comes to our finances, that in the way in which we walk and live in this world with money will be in a way that pleases you and honors you and brings you glory. Help us in our failures in it. Forgive us for our sin in it. And help us walk in the future from here out with wisdom and skill when it comes to this. For your glory and honor, in your name, amen.